back here on National Geographic Weekend. I'm Boyd Mattson. There is a theory in some circles with women. To find a prince, you've got to lick a lot of frogs. Well, why don't we bring in the expert? We have frog licker Valerie Clark with us. She's been here before. Actually does serious frog research in Madagascar. Welcome back to the show, Valerie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Hey, you know, I was just cruising around on the interweb, and I saw there's actually a website called I Licked a Frog, where they ask people to share their stories of frog licking. Have you seen that?
No, and I'm surprised I haven't, but I do want to comment that I have tried kissing some guys in hopes that they would turn back into frogs, and it never worked out.
Well, you lick your frogs for a purpose other than looking for a prince. You're looking to see if they're – it's just a way to check if they're poisonous or toxic.
And you just don't want to go around licking any frog either. That could end up – you know, have you end up in a hospital dead or who knows what, or on some sort of strange, crazy trip that you don't want. So you generally actually want to go in for a little sniff first.
And actually, that's probably a good rule.
Sniff before you lick.
We should explain, you know, what kind of frogs you're looking for, because you're looking for toxic frogs in Madagascar. And these are tiny little things. They're about the size of a thumbnail.
They're really little, and they're sequestering alkaloid toxins from their diet of ants, millipedes, mites, and beetles.
And that's the key here. It's you are what you eat. In this case, the diet of the frogs turns out to affect the condition of their skin that make them toxic.
It's frog food for thought.
Food for thought. Which is kind of unusual because humans eat things that have some of those same toxic properties, but we don't get that transferred to our skin. And so the mystery is how they do it?
Ooh, well, you're touching on some research that I haven't published yet. But there,
take a wild guess.
In general terms, you could say that there are systems in people that when you take drugs and things like that, that you're going to be able to eliminate toxins through your urine. But instead of, and perhaps in addition to, eliminating toxins through the urine, they're actually sweating it out their skin. And exactly how that happens, we should be publishing some results on that next year.
Oh, great.
That'll be another interview, though. Sorry.
Yeah. Valerie Clark, by the way, is a National Geographic grantee. And is there anything that we can gain from studying the frog toxicity other than learning how they get that way? Are we looking for chemicals that can help us, perhaps?
Well, any chemical that's toxic, it's you know, also a matter of dose. So a lower level of that toxin could actually be beneficial and perhaps, you know, serve as some sort of drug. Or if you tweak the lead that you find that the frogs are actually going out there into the forest and sampling countless arthropods for us and sequestering all their chemicals and concentrating it and then sweating it out into their skin glands. And so when we sample a frog, if that frog's 3 years old, we're sampling 3 years of its sampling.
And how much of the time do you have to spend out in the field to get enough material to study, enough frogs and enough insects and ants and whatever else they're eating?
I spend as much time as possible, sometimes up to 2 months in a forest. It is possible to go and make good collections in about 8 days. But of course, the more extensive your collection, the better chance you have of pinpointing the exact sources of the defensive chemicals that the frogs sequester. And I definitely think it's better to spend more time there so that you can work with the local communities and start to understand the conservation challenges in each area and to do some outreach and give back. And you can learn from the people there and also help them learn more about why the area that they live in is so special and encourage them to cherish it.
We pointed out these frogs are tiny little things, the size of, the end of a finger or end of a thumb, which means you don't just walk along and automatically spot them right off the bat.
Well, a lot of them are very brightly colored, so sometimes you can see them from quite a distance.
Ah. I'll tell you what, we've got a video of some of Valerie's work, and we're going to put it up on our website, a connection to the video that you can actually see, where we sent a camera crew out with her to watch her lick frogs, collect frogs, and do some of the research that she's been talking about. So we'll put that up on our website. You can go and check out and see exactly the kind of work Valerie's talking about. And then we're going to have you come back and explain that great mystery of how they get the poison from the ants to become a toxic substance on the skin of the frog.
And not only that, but also how that whole system relates to human physiology.
Perfect. All right, Valerie, it's good to catch up with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
I think one of the greatest fears that parents have is that first time they decide to take a little trip and leave the teenage kids at home by themselves. because you're just not sure that when you return, you're going to even find your home. Because, who knows, they've thrown a party, invited their friends over, they've gotten into the liquor cabinet, they burned the place down. Well, folks, believe it or not, it's the same with teenage elephants. Without parental authority, they just go crazy. You have to have adult supervision. We will tell you about some of the trouble teenage elephants get into when the folks aren't around. That's when we return here on National Geographic Weekend. I'm Boyd Matson.